I know you can't believe it. You're looking at your podcast feed and bang, two podcasts last week. Bang, another podcast this week. What is going on? It's another podcast from Celtic Underground, the people behind CelticUnderground.net, however you want to word it. And I'll introduce my guests as the podcast comes along. And we're going to talk about transfer rumours. We're going to talk about the team. We're going to talk about the Aberdeen game, briefly. And we're going to talk about other stuff. And chuck in a last second bit of transfer gossip that you have to listen right at the very end as we give our predictions for the Kilmarnock game. So I am joined now again. You'll all be knocked off your feet. This is the third podcast inside. It's probably a football manager's week when their week's last 8 days, when they talk about having three games in a week, three podcasts a week. I am joined once again by Eddie Pearson. How you doing, Eddie?
Three podcasts in a week. Absolutely incredible.
It is. Well, based on the conversation we had in the last podcast, the first free transfer has occurred coming out of retirement. We have Paul Thompson. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good. Thanks for the build-up, Harry. I think this is my third podcast in a decade. Never mind three in a week. So I'm looking forward to this. This is great.
And we got lots and lots and lots of very, thank you very much for all those people who rated us on Apple Podcasts. It put us right up the charts. That's what people say in podcasts. I don't know if we actually did, but thanks a lot for lots of people saying there was positive, really positive chat on last week's podcast. In fact, Eddie, I think you got some people saying it was a bit too positive.
A couple of people on Twitter were a bit unhappy that we were too positive and things weren't quite as good as we were making out. And they felt as if we were kidding ourselves on a wee bit.
Okay, so we are now joined by St. Anthony as well, just to help balance that out. So how are you doing, Saint?
Keeping the best till last, Harry. I'm fine, thank you very much.
So let's just be clear. The first week of the season, there was two people on it. Second week of the season, there was three people. Now we've got four. By the end of this season, we're going to need like a church hall to fit us all in.
It'll be like one of your team's sessions where there's lots of people on, somebody opens their mouth and you go, oh,
why don't we hire a studio?
I better put him off.
why don't we hire a studio?
It is the in thing. However, as everybody listening to this podcast knows, this is the podcast for the mildly irritated over 40-year-old Celtic supporter who can't be asked with all that modern mumbo-jumbo garbage. That's what this podcast is for. We know our audience. No XGXA stuff here. This is just uninformed nonsense. So on that, Paul, what was your take on the weekend? What was your thoughts about the weekend?
I'm surprised that there was quite a bit of Twitter hyperbole around it. I was quite surprised. I thought we were a bit, you know, flaky in defence just now, and I think that's probably down to the personnel issues. Certainly, the right back, the tactical issues with the left back, and the new guy coming in. And on top of that, Carter Vickers had a nightmare, which was very, very unusual. But I actually didn't think we played that badly. I thought, you know, going back over my last few years, trying to imagine the number of times we went up to Aberdeen and not being happy coming away with any kind of win would be low. So I genuinely thought we were okay. Just a little bit worried about defence, but that is the second game of the season and we've still got quite a bit of the transfer window to go.
And Eddie?
I hate to be positive, but I echo a lot of what Paul was saying there. It's Pittodrie. We're playing against an Aberdeen side that look as if they're going quite well. I did predict 3-1 by sheer chance, and sure enough, that's what it worked out to be. But they made a decent game of it. And, you know, but we're constantly complaining when we watch Celtic that there's no competition and that it's too easy and teams just sit in. And as soon as the team doesn't just sit in and starts to give us a game, then everybody goes mental on social media as the game progresses, saying, this isn't good enough, that isn't good enough, and we're rotten. And this. you know, we don't have a God-given right to win games. We are the better team and we should win games, but we need to use the whole 90 minutes to do so. And if another team is playing well, that should make for a better spectacle. I put up a half-time, it's a decent game. And somebody replied, aye, that's what you say when we're not playing well. Nah, not really. It was just a decent game. We were better in the second half than we were in the first. Cara Vickers, I thought, made a bad mistake for the goal. I thought the Polish boy looked a bit slow coming in to cover his man. But other than that, I thought we looked quite comfortable. Great going forward. Really exciting going forward. Got a break of the ball for the second goal. Bad mistake by the defender. We were definitely onside for the first. And O'Reilly's looking terrific. O'Reilly looks like a player that has been freed from whatever it was that was making him unhappy under the previous manager and is playing with a lot of freedom. The only downside for me, I think, is a concern would be perhaps that Callum McGregor has started the season a wee bit quietly. We're only two games in, so I'm not looking to get a 1,000-word article about it, but I'm looking forward to seeing him find his form, and I don't know whether that's because he's now playing, at the moment it looks like he's playing on his own in that defensive mid, and perhaps he doesn't have the same support from inverted fullbacks that he had last season. And again, that'll just take time for us to get used to. But quite happy with overall performance. Last time we went there, it took us, 83 minutes, 87 minutes, can't remember, for McGregor to score with a shot from outside the box. So it went 3-1 at Pittodrie. You'd need to be a particularly negative Celtic supporter to complain. So on that.
Saint, what did you think of the game?
Given the fact that there's no Jota, no Starfelt, no Moy, given the fact that Johnson's injured, O's injured, given the fact that Carter Vickers clearly was struggling and went off injured at half time, and then Hatate went off injured in the second half, I think in many ways we were down to the bare bones. So to come away for Pittodrie in what I always regard as one of their hardest away games, with a 3-1 victory with a weakened team, I thought it was a terrific result, and I was very, very pleased. I think what we need to bear in mind here as well is that I'm not really sure what formation or what playing shape that Rodgers wants us to play yet. And you know, Eddie made a good point there about maybe McGregor's not sure what's happening. Because, and I think the fullbacks, I have to say, if there was a complaint to be made, I think the Ralston and Taylor looked like the Ralston and Taylor when Lennon was there, rather than when Ange was there. And I don't know if it's to do with the inverted fullback role, whether we're playing it, whether we're not playing it. It's kind of hard to tell at the moment because things haven't settled down yet in terms of the team selection and the formation we're playing. But the one thing is, and again, Eddie commented on it there, Aberdeen made the right good fisting. You know, when you think of that game last season, they didn't get a shot in target all game and we scored a late winner through McGregor. Well, this game, you know, a wee bit of luck from their point of view, they might get something out of it. I thought the turning point actually was when they had a really good move and the ball came into the area and Shinny headered it over the bar. He had a free header maybe about 8-10 yards out. And I got a bit of fright at that point. I actually thought when he headered it was going in. So I don't think there's many teams that's going to go to Pittodrie this season and come back with 3 points. And given the fact that, you know, not to let Eddie and yourself down here, Harry, but I'm going to moan a wee bit here and say, if that team that started in Sunday goes into the Champions League, we'll get brutalised. That'll be an equivalent of the Huns last season. So really, we have a lot of ground to make up in the transfer window. If we don't sign 3 or 4 really, really good players, then I think this Champions League campaign is going to be grim.
So we spent £4.5 million on the centre-half that was playing along Carter Vickers. We just signed another centre-half for, I think, £3 million. So we spent £7.5 million in the centre-half position so far this transfer window. And we've spent around £3 million on a central midfielder in home. So we have, I mean, that's more than the people that they're replacing cost. That's more than Starfelt cost, and it's more than Moy cost.
You're coming up against teams that can pay £105 million for a fanny like Declan Rice. So, I mean, I'm putting it in perspective here. In the domestic league, we will do very, very well, but we should do very, very well given the squad of players that we have. The point I'm making is We're going into the Champions League with a new manager, probably the guts of a new team, and a lot of players who are unknown at that level. So we don't really know if these guys are going to be able to cut it at Champions League level. The real big concerns about that. So what I'm looking for before the window is, I said three or four, maybe that's not feasible, but I'm looking for two or three really good players that can get right into the first team and make a difference at that level. And listen, that's no easy about trying to get people to come to our league.
Well, you've just made the very point, because you're competing against teams who spend £100 million on a guy at the same position. So does it really make a difference if you play a £3 million centre midfield player or an £8 million centre midfield player against a £100 million centre midfield player?
Well, generally speaking, you get what you pay for. It's not always the case. So, I think what's frustrating a lot of the supporters in is that we've got the Champions League money coming in, but we've got the big transfer fees, particularly for Jota. We're already sitting with X million pounds in the bank for last season. So, I don't think we're ever going to get a better opportunity in the Champions League, because these two seasons have been a blessing, and as much as we don't have the pressure of qualifying. And I would have expected us maybe to do our business a wee bit sooner. But given the fact you've got a new manager coming in and he's got to assess his squad before he makes any decisions, then there's maybe a decent enough reason for that. But yeah, the Champions League, to be honest, it gives me the fear.
Paul, seven transfers isn't enough, Saint says. What's your thoughts?
Well, I get a little bit where Saint's coming from on it. I think there's definitely a feeling that we've signed players that have got potential, that have got the ability to potentially become good players, but you know, they're still early in some of their development. You know, Holm looks a very good player, for example, but yeah, he's still a little bit rough around the edges, and the sense is he's probably not Champions League ready. I guess I saw somebody on Twitter earlier mentioning it. If you look at 2 years ago, on the final day, transfer deadline day, we brought in Carter Vickers and Jota on loan, and we brought in Giakoumakis, who certainly the first two turned out to be big players for us. That's maybe the route we're going to have to go down again, is taking it to the end for those types of players. You're saying, nailed it himself, was saying, the problem we've got is the attractiveness of the league. It's not so much, you know, Champions League is great, but it's potentially only six games. It'll be more games next year, but six this year if you don't have a good campaign. And you know, some of the players that we might be looking for that come into that, we're certainly not going to compete for the £100 million players, but you might just about fancy yourself to get the £7 to £10 million players coming to Scotland. But you know, it's still a big ask. A lot of them are waiting to see who else comes in for them. A lot of their agents are advising them to wait to the very, very end. And then you've got the players who are surplus at clubs as well, because the £100 million players have come in. So I think we're going to have to be a wee bit more patient for the next couple of weeks. It's not a great message to send out, but it's a nature of being a big fish in a small pond. It's hard to get players to come here of that nature.
Eddie, you're the man with the word rumour in your Twitter handle. So what are the rumours around transfers in and out? I know there's, I mean, obviously you mentioned there about Callum McGregor. The midfield's the area for me where if we're needing to do business, that's one area, because there's allegedly two clubs interested in Hitati, and I don't know if Turnbull's a long-term solution. So you're the man who's going to answer our prayers. What are all the rumours?
Hi, thanks for that. Hey, all the stuff that seems to be doing the rounds just now is there's a lot of talk about a guy for Wolves again that we were interested in before he went there, and he's only got a year in his contract left. I've not heard that yet from anybody who we would trust. You know, so basically your Stephen McGowan type of levels, you know, or the folk that we know that are working at the club just now. That's not to say it's not entirely possible, but it's not really coming from anywhere other than it's just rumour feeding upon rumour and creating that. There was talk of there's a young guy at Ipswich that is a left back that used to be at Leeds, and I can't remember the guy's name, and there was talk we were having a look at him, but I don't know if there's anything coming of that. The big talk is Kieran Tierney at the moment, and the suggestion seems to be that Tierney has the opportunity to go to Leipzig, or Sociedad or Newcastle are all interested in, or us. And Arsenal are trying to get their money back that they've spent on Declan Rice. They clearly don't see Kieran Tierney as a long-term solution or even a short-term solution to some of their injury problems. And Tierney would be keen to come back. But a big issue is, as things stand just now, we can't compete financially with what Arsenal would be looking for. It may be that it sits tight and we get to the end of this transfer window, and because he's no went anywhere, they might let us take him on loan. A bit like the way Cameron Carter-Vickers kind of shaped up in his first transfer window to us. But there's a long way to go between now and then, and a lot of things can happen between now and then. But that's kind of the big one. And see, if you're going to ask me every single week what are the transfer rumours, I'm not coming on again. but that's the key one, I think, that we've been talking about online or offline, I should say, this past week. It's he wants to come, we want him to come, but funnily enough, the issue is money. And I see folk talking about, oh, it's back to the Lowell days, and it's back to this, and it's back. It's not back to the Lowell days at all. Lowell's influence is negligible. And whether you want to believe that or no, it's dead easy to have a bogeyman when it comes to talking about transfer window and transfer rumours. But the harsh reality is, we don't have the money that Arsenal want today to bring Kieran Tierney back to Celtic. We may have the money that Arsenal are willing to accept on the last day of the transfer window, but we don't have it today. And that's what Sam was saying. That's the issue with so many of the players that we are interested in. That's why we're going to Sweden. That's why we're looking elsewhere at different players and trying to find bargains and trying to get them early. I was looking at, I think it was Barca Boy put up a really good tweet that the players that we've signed six players for £15 million, aged 20, 21, 21, 22, 22 and 23. Now, somebody will come back and say, aye, projects. We kind of keep saying projects when we look at guys like Yang coming in and showing he's got something on Saturday. Young players will come in and they'll do well at times and they'll do not so well at other times. So if you want a finished product, you're talking about spending big money. Those players are never going to come to us as their first choice when they can go to a Wolves or they can go to a Brentford or any of these clubs. The days of being able to get Paolo Di Canio coming from Milan to Celtic, there's no way a player like that would come to us now. No way. So we have to start looking at different options earlier in the transfer window. And if we want to try and get a bargain, then it's going to be right to the death. And I think the Kieran Tierney situation is a perfect example of.
Hold on a minute. I'm supposed to be the depressing one here. What's going on?
I didn't think that's...
No, you're right. You are a depressing one. Trust me on that.
I didn't think that was depressing. I thought that was realistic. Look. We invest in young players because that's what we do, and they're going to be good for us. And if anybody, and if you're wanting a guy who's a bit more mature, he's not going to want to come to us. So don't get your knickers in a twist about not signing him. They're not going to come until the very last minute because the other options don't exist. That's just life.
Wait a minute, I'm not going to have to put up with the difference between being a pessimist and being a realist that used to come to more time. What's up? Paul, you've no idea what you miss out on. One of them, normally about half time, we'll say we need to get rid of this one and get that off the pitch and get that one on. And then the other one will go, you're just a pessimist. And the first one will go, no, I'm a realist. And I'll leave that to the 2 years to figure out who's who.
And the non-pessimist at half time will say, a football match lasts 90 minutes, give it time. And obviously, due to our lack of loss record, more times than not, the non-pessimist proves to be correct.
No, in Europe, isn't it? No, listen, I want to make a point here. I think that there's something, a serious point has to be made. In terms of the signings we've made, in terms of the team we've got at the moment, the one thing that I think we lack is a bit of experience. Now I totally get the fact we're signing 21, 22, 23-year-olds. There's no doubt they've got talent. There's no doubt they've got potential. And I'm not complaining about any of the signings. But I just think one of the things that Big Ange was cute enough to appreciate when he came as a manager was he signed Joe Hart, he signed Juranovic, he signed Starfelt, he signed Kyogo, he even signed James McCarthy. Now, don't laugh at that because that clearly, obviously, hasn't worked out. But the point I'm making here is that we needed experienced players in the team. You can't just fill the team full of boys and hope that they'll all gel. And I wonder, I know McGregor's a captain, but I wonder somehow if we need a leadership figure on the pitch that the younger guys can look up to and appreciate. And some
McGregor. You've got tons of players like Carter Vickers. You've got Kyogo, who's 28. You've got McGregor in there. You've got Forrest, who's on the bench. You've got Hart, that starts the game. You got a 26-year-old Greg Taylor, 26, 25.
Mm-hmm. Isaac Maeda's 25.
I don't know if I accept your premise there. Yes, we have a couple of young players and we've brought young players in, but there's a core, a quality there, an experience there, and most importantly, players who have experience of playing for Celtic, not necessarily just old players, but players who understand the pressure of winning leagues for Celtic. I feel as if I've prevented Bolfi coming in on this one, but so I'll cede the floor to anybody who wants to come back. But I don't accept your premise that we need experienced players. We've got experienced players.
Paul, on you go.
The one thing I was going to say, and just to prove I actually listened to last week's podcast for once, you had a good discussion about player development last week and the options that goes around, but there was a missing bit for me, and it ties into what we're talking about here, which is the patience of the fans. So the hysterics that are going on this week, not necessarily in this call, I used to add, but in terms of the Twitter and the social media reaction to the lack of patience around signings, that's the same as what we're like with young players. Young players don't get a chance to come into the team and make a mistake. So in terms of that sort of cross-linking it to the discussion you had last week, it's the same thing. Fans just want 10, 15, 20 million pound players in there. And realistically, we need a balance of all of that. We need the young players, we need our own players coming through, and we need the experienced players. But we need to be a wee bit more patient as fans at times as well.
You like people who are Celtic-minded people being in the team, saying, I mean, you know, and that's not a criticism, you like. So how do you deal with that inner dilemma as a fan, that you want the team to be full of Celtic fans and you want us to go out and spend as much money as we can on players? Because that's a dilemma for all fans. So how do you deal with that?
I don't want a team to be full of Celtic fans, but I think you need to have I think the great Celtic teams through the years have always had two or three players in it who, I know it's a cliche, but that they know what it means to play for Celtic and they've got an appreciation of the club. I'm not one of these guys that tell. I was arguing with a guy quite recently, actually, and he says, "Oh, we should be going for young Scottish players," and I was horrified because I don't think there is very many young Scottish players that I would advocate Celtic signing right now, I can see. And B, I don't care where they come from, if they come from Japan, South Korea, you know, South America, Africa, whatever. I just want to see the best players in the park wearing a Celtic jersey. But I'll make a further point to see if he's agree with it. I think the one thing we really need at the moment is, and I hope we get this before the window finishes, is a signing that will get the fans going. You know, like that, all that everybody will go, oh yes. Now, I don't know who that guy is. I don't know where he's coming from. And I know we could all bandy names about, but I just think at the moment we need something that will just get the fans excited, that will just get everybody going. And, you know, there is rumours, certainly, in terms of the fact that as the transfer window comes to an end, agents become a wee bit desperate and then moves begin to happen. Nothing much is happening in the transfer market at the moment, but you can damn tootin' in about 7 days, 10 days time, things will start to move. Often there's a domino effect. One happens and then a team gets money and then it gets things moving. But I'm thinking of the likes of when we signed the George Cadet, the electric sort of current that went through the support at the time, you know, and I know it's difficult, but we've already been through the debate, but it's difficult to get guys here, but I really, really hope that before August we can get something, we can get a signing and everybody goes, oh yes.
I agree with that. I agree with this. I don't know whether it's entitled fans or whether it's just not inspiring signings, but to unknown signings, but there's definitely not been a signing yet that people think it's get bums off seats. There's no, and we might not get a signing like that. It might not be that type of window, but we are in show business as a club, and I don't think there's been a lot of show so far in my transfer business. It may well be that we've signed very effective players and who will turn into those type of players. You know, home looks are always. He's got something about him. We spoke last week and we said he looks like he's a footballer. Looks like maybe more than that. He looks like he loves his Lego and things, you know, so he's a dead interesting guy through that. but there hasn't been a back page splash type of signing yet. I would agree with you on that one. Maybe we don't need that. Maybe we just need good quality. But I think that the social media environment we live in now, and the need for instant gratification, the 24-hour news cycle, so I'll put it back all down to the fact that Super Scoreboard was on 5 days a week. There's not enough news in Scottish football for Super Scoreboard to be on 5 days a week. But that type of thing, somebody that's got his all talking for a week and a half, like the guy we signed yesterday, looks like he could be a cracking signing in the fullness of time, but he's not the type of player you're talking about. So I do agree with you on that one, Saint.
So Paul, we've talked about players coming in, but there's still possibility of players going out. One of the rumours, obviously there's rumours around whether Joe Hart will still be here or whether we'll replace Joe Hart. And then the other big one is Hitati, who, you know, reading into what Brendan Rodgers was saying, it's pretty clear that Brendan Rodgers is saying, well, if you want to leave, leave, and if you want to stay, turn into my type of player. What do you think's going on there, Paul?
Hitati's an interesting one because, we know from what we've seen the last year and a half, he's an exceptional player. Whether he's a Rodgers player seems to be the issue. It seems to be, Rodgers is, I assume, trying to send them some kind of message around what he's seen on a daily basis from him. I know he was unfortunate to get injured. He did make a difference when he came on for that brief period on Saturday. But the problem we've got with sending that message is that you need to play Turnbull to send the message. And that's a worry for me because Turnbull at best is probably sixth or seventh choice in our midfield, really, in the hierarchy that is most of us here. I'd like to think the Hitati thing's just, let's play this out over the next 2 weeks and he comes good, but that's him going to be out till probably after the end of the transfer window anyway now. He's going to be injured well into September, I think, so that might help us sort of bed him back down again come the turn, and unless somebody comes in and takes him unfit, which I don't know, but I'd be loath to let him go because I think he really is a good, really good player, and he gives us something different that we've not got in any of the other players we've got at the club. He's just got a little bit of vision. His long passing's incredible. He had one right after he came on Saturday, or right after half-time on Saturday, where he played a diagonal kind of left to right, 50 yards right on, I think, a Abada's foot, which is just exceptional. So we've not got anybody else at the club that can play that kind of ball.
And Eddie, your thoughts, is Hitati coming or going?
I think we might keep him for the Champions League, but he might go in the next window. I think Paul made a lot of good points there in terms of, Hitati's a player that a lot of us were paying to watch. I think I said last week he's got the Paul McStay pass in him. Paul, do you think though that the problem is that Rodgers wants to play a possession game, and Hitati's ambition with his passing means that sometimes you lose possession, and is it a sacrifice worth making to retain possession to lose that really exciting, incisive ball when it comes off? I don't have the statistics. John Joe or any of the guys on the huddle breakdown would probably give you statistics on it. But how many times does he try a pass that comes off, as opposed to how many times does he try a pass and he loses possession? And is Rodgers looking at that and thinking, I'd rather have somebody that retains possession, and 9 times out of 10. And somebody that plays like that fantastic ball out wide in the second half, once, and if it gives away possession two or three times, is it worth having a player like that when he gives away possession?
There's a lot of tiny midfielders out there. There's a lot of good midfielders that are that can help with ball retention, that can play the decent short passes. There's not that many that have got the vision to do the things. Certainly in recent years at Celtic, that have got the vision to do the things that Hitati's capable of doing. Now, whether Rodgers thinks that suits his system, time will tell us. It doesn't look like at the moment he's particularly keen on Hitati, but I just think if you're going to be looking to get behind really tight, really well organised defences domestically and try and play against some exceptional teams at a European level, you need something that's very different within your team. You need the joker, if that's the right expression, but you need somebody that can just produce something that's exceptional. And my concern is, you know, O'Reilly's a really tidy player. I think O'Reilly's, I think he is blossoming in the early days under Rodgers as well. I know somebody made that point earlier. But he's not got Hitati's vision of passing, and I just think you need that somewhere in your squad. If you've got that, I'd be loath to let it go.
I think you're right. I agree with you.
Sane, what's your thoughts on Hitati? Because I understand Hitati, Maeda and Kyogo were all given, or their agents were all given contracts at the same time, end of February, beginning of March, and with minimal tweaks, Kyogo and Maeda agreed to theirs, and Hitati has come back with nothing. And that's really fueling, my understanding is that's fueling the Brendan focusing on somebody else, because his assumption is that Hitati's off. What's your thoughts?
The first thing that horrified me, just as Paul was saying there, is that, you know, it became clear that Brendan was going to choose Turnbull over Hitati, given the fact that Hitati had a poor game in Forest testimonial against Atletico Bilbao. Now, I know that Brendan's getting it here, because I was a huge, huge fan of Stuart Armstrong, and I was also a big admirer of Ryan Christie. And I think that both of them blossomed under Rodgers. That proved what a good coach he was, that he could take these two guys and he could turn them into really, really good players. But when they looked, to be honest, when they first joined, they looked mediocre. But the thing about Turnbull is, and I don't mean this to be a criticism of Turnbull, because he's clearly trying his best. He's very, very one-paced, and he slows the game down too much for me. Whereas when Hitati gets the ball, as somebody, I can't remember which one you said there, it's almost like Paul McStay, because the ball moves quickly. And that, I know the pass that he's describing there, the one through to Abada, it was clear that when Hitati came in the park that, in my eyes, that we were going to win at that point. But just because that our performance level had jumped up a notch. I don't want to be seen to be picking in Turnbull, because he's a good squad player and he's a good guy to have in the domestic game. He can come in and probably one of the SPL games and he'll crack in a couple of great goals. But I think when you're going into the Champions League and you're maybe even playing Rangers and Hearts and the likes, maybe Ibrox and Tynecastle, then Turnbull's no for me. Another thing as well, and I've already said this on Twitter, Turnbull and Turnbull and O'Reilly, it's one or the other for me. They're too similar in style. And what the two of them lack is, and they're good players, but they lack pace. And what that boy Holmes showed in a very, very short cameo appearance, there's two things. Number one, he can get about the pitch. He's no slouch. And the other thing that really delighted me was he was the only midfield player the whole game that put a tackle in near the end. And I mean a real, real, you know, stud showing tackle. One of the ones that is, if they say, don't mess with me. So, you know, I hope we see a lot of that boy home in the future, because that, you know, it is only a couple of short appearances that he's played, but, you know, it does look as if he's got something.
So that's the sort of Hitati. Just overall on the sort of general comings and goings, we've got 2 weeks left. Paul, what's your, not what you want, what's your expectation of what we're going to get in over the next 2 weeks and what's going to go out?
I think a goalkeeper is essential. I know Sigrist and Bain are there to make up the numbers, but neither of them you can rely on. Hart, I still like Joel Hart. I think he's had a great couple of seasons for us, but you can see the creaks starting to appear. So I would like a potential, you know, competitive goalkeeper to compete with Hart. I think we absolutely need to cover left back. I think Taylor's, you know, I feel quite sorry for Greg Taylor actually, because I think Greg Taylor has had probably an exceptional 18 months or so under Ange, playing the system that Ange wanted to play. It doesn't look like Rodgers wants to play that way and have Taylor in particular playing that manner. And he's back to, I think Sane said earlier, he's back to the sort of what we saw under Lennon, and it's, you know, he's proven he's better than that. And that's the issue, is how do you get him to play in that system? And I'm not sure he can. And that's where it does get interesting, if you know, do the throwback and bring Tierney back to get the band back together from that perspective for Rodgers. So,
Paul, do you not think that a player that's here I come in with my defence of Greg Taylor as per usual, right? But do you not think that a player that can adapt to the way that Ange wanted the fullbacks to play,
He's clearly got the intelligence that he can adapt to the way that Rodgers wants his fullbacks to play. I just feel as if that there's a head of steam gathering a bit too quickly about Greg Taylor. And people are saying, you know, he can't date in Europe. Wait a minute. How many of them actually could date in Europe? Who are we pointing to that was an outstanding performer in the Champions League? You know what I mean? Like, there's tons of them couldn't date in Europe. Tons of them didn't achieve in Europe. But I feel as if we're in danger of going, right, Greg Taylor's not good enough. I mean, he gets shot at him.
No,
I know you're not saying that, right? I accept that, and I think that perhaps that Rodgers is maybe thinking that, I think it might come back to bite him, because I think that Greg Taylor's a player that the club can depend on, and if we try and sideline him too early, and we bring in somebody that isn't Kieran Tierney, because we don't get Kieran Tierney, we try and bring somebody else. I've got one of those feelings that he'll force his way back in, a bit like Paddy Roberts trying to come in and trying to force James Forrest out, and James Forrest just basically stepping up and taking his position. I think Greg Taylor can do that. I think that we're creating a narrative around Greg Taylor that is not based on the reality of what the guy's done in a Celtic jersey. And I think he's turning into a real mainstay of the team. And I think perhaps we need to look more at what he is doing well. Chris Sutton gave him a hell of a time in the commentary on Sunday. And I felt as if there were worse offenders in Greg Taylor, and there were worse offenders also in Tony Ralston on Sunday. And they both played a similar type of game. But for some reason, Greg Taylor kept getting it. And so that then creates a bandwagon that a lot of people jump into. Well, if Chris Sutton's saying it on the telly, that must be the case. Now, maybe people are making their own opinions on him. But I think we're being a bit too quick to pile on to Greg Taylor. He's not any worse start to the season than many other teams, other players on the team.
I think you're absolutely fair. I didn't want to get the impression I was, you know, against Greg Taylor. I think what I'm saying is he's proven to be exceptional in the role that he was asked to play under Ange. And I hold my hand up. I didn't think he was capable of being the player that he proved to be over the last 18 months based on what I saw in the 18 months before that. But, you know, maybe it is. It seems to be something that's in Rodgers' head around the system. Maybe it's just the early days of the system bending itself down in terms of how Rodgers wants to play. But something doesn't look right with the two fullbacks. I think probably, you know, I heard you talking quite a bit about Johnson on the podcast last week, and even maybe that's just the balance thing. It's not a case that Tony Ralston's not a good player. I think he's rusty. He's not played a lot of football in the last year and a half. He played a lot the previous season, didn't play as much last year with Juranovic and injuries and then Johnson coming in and blowing everybody away. But it just feels, the defence feels a little unbalanced just now, and you know, maybe that is just a combination of all those things. Just get back to you.
You mentioned a really interesting name there, Juranovic. Was Juranovic great in the Champions League? Was he any better than Greg Taylor in the Champions League?
No, not absolutely.
He got roasted by that boy at Shakhtar Donetsk that went to Chelsea, whose name totally escapes me just now, and if Pearson Jones was here, he'd be able to tell me to stay away. He got absolutely roasted by him. Yep. You know, so the players that we've got, aren't they going to set the Champions League on fire? But I feel as if we're just getting bogged down in Greg Taylor. And I don't mean you personally, because you spoke very well there about it. But maybe everybody else needs to maybe step back for a week.
I think it's fair. I mean, just getting back to Harry's question, the only other position where I'd really like, and it probably ties back into what Saint was saying, I'd really like us to have somebody creative. If it's not going to be Hatate, or if there's an injury concern about Hatate for any length of time, I'd really like to see somebody in the middle of the park that's got a bit of experience, a bit of guile, can hold the ball, but can also find a pass. And you know, I think we're a wee bit light in that when Hatate's not playing.
Do you know what my fear is? My fear is we have to replace Jota. And I was a huge fan of Jota. I thought Jota peaked last season, and he gave us a different dimension on his game. He was one of the players that when it was a big game, he very rarely did he turn up. You know, he was a character. He was a personality player that the fans really took to. And I think that now he's away, I think our attacking, how can I describe it? Our attacking options are somewhat limited but without Jota. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, is that a position that we really need somebody like a flair player in there that can take that mantle that Jota had? And I really wonder if I don't know much about to be honest. I don't watch a lot of English football, but I've heard he's mentioned, is it Podence or Podence? How do you pronounce it? I don't know how you pronounce it. The guy for Wolves,
was just going to say, the easiest thing for me is I always just say the Wolves guy until I can work out what he's signing. What any player's name is, the big Swedish guy, the new Polish guy, the Wolves guy.
Well, what I'm saying is that perhaps this Wolves guy would fit the bill as in a personality player, a guy who's got who can give us a different dimension on the pitch. To, you know, the rest of them are all good team players and they're all good at what they do. But we just need somebody special. Now, the other thing that really upset me about Jota leaving, the Rangers fans of my acquaintance were absolutely ecstatic when Jota left because they were terrified of him. You know, like Jota, every game against Rangers practically, he turned up and did the business. And they were so relieved to see him leaving, which sort of, but when you see that reaction for the opposition fans, that worries me a bit.
But we're always going to have players go. That's life. But on the talk to fans and stuff like that, the other thing is, Paul, you go a lot of away games. What's your thoughts on us not taking the 800 tickets for Ibrox?
I'm absolutely delighted. I'm not delighted with the situation that we're in around Ibrox because, you know, things had lasted for a long time with both Rangers clubs in terms of how we visited that place. But it's not been a safe environment for our fans going there in the last number of years. The number of incidents involving players, coaches and staff and fans has been ridiculous. And, you know, I think the message has to be sent. If they can't guarantee the safety of our fans and our players going there, then, you know, they shouldn't be hosting anybody. They shouldn't be hosting their own fans. But I don't, you know, I'm quite pleased with how the club have handled that. I don't think that it will be a popular decision with certain parts of the media because they'll now forward the notion that this is Celtic who are doing this, which we all know is not the case, where this started came from a hissy fit from the Rangers board after humiliation in front of the Brimley stand. So I'm delighted that Celtic are taking the stance they're taking. It is a mess. It's not it doesn't reflect very well in Scottish football. It certainly doesn't reflect at all well in Rangers. But I think in this one, the board are doing the right thing.
Eddie, what's your thoughts? Because they still managed to find... I know that our preference, the amount that our sort of preferred amount of segregation for away fans, but in the corner there, I think it's somewhere in the region of 3,000 or 3,500. That's our optimum amount. And that's about the amount that they seem to give to away fans at European games, at Champions League games, and if they're there, or Europa League games. You know, like, I'm sure, I think, you know, that'll probably be the number that PSV get. So what's your thoughts on it? I know our preference was go to 3,000. They've said, no, it's 800, we're sticking at it. And we've said, stick it up your jacksie. What's your thoughts?
No, I'm biased because I'm in the Rangers end, the family stand. We call it family stand now, don't we? I'm in a family stand, so we don't get the Rangers tickets automatically on our season ticket, and only because they're not being offered out are we assured of getting them. So I'm just putting my cards on the table there and saying I'm coming at it from quite a selfish point of view. So it suits me down to the ground if we don't have them back in, because it means me and the rest of my family get to see the game. In terms of going to Ibrox, though, there are people that travel home and away and have been denied the opportunity to be part of that who follow the team and support them brilliantly. I think, did we not ask for netting to be put up and they refused to do it? Now, I might be wrong on that, but I think there was something about Glasgow City Council involving the safety of away fans. Motherwell fans have spoken about bottles getting thrown in before and different fans, you know, and it's always just one guy that does it. I'm not saying the whole Rangers support there, but there's real concern.
That one guy.
He's a nightmare, that guy. See if we can get hold of him and just sort it. Everything will be brilliant in there. He's involved in everything that guy's up to, no good. He's a right
that one guy sings all the songs. that one guy writes all the stuff on message boards. That one guy is some troublemaker.
He's just a cheeky monkey, isn't he? Is there no something about the European section that they say there's an issue with getting fans out in and out of the ground? I don't know. I'm not making excuses for them, but if you can do it with Liverpool supporters, then surely you can do it with Celtic supporters. But I think that the fact that we're refusing tickets there, there's a lot of talk that we're going to refuse tickets at Tynecastle as well. But they're trying to make a very clear statement: we will be taking our allocation for Celtic Park. You know, which echoes, you know, these are the Queen's highways, and we are entitled to walk down them for some reason. I don't know why that's coming in my head. But you know, we will be arriving and taking our rightful seats because the King has entitled us to them.
But the difference is, you walk down the King's Highway for free. Is there any restriction on us charging what the hell we want?
You literally took a buzzer out of my mouth. Why don't we just say you can have a ticket, but it's £900 a pop? But, you know, is there an upper limit of what we can charge? Because it doesn't look like it. We've been charging 50 quid and different things. And only sell 8 tickets. Is there a minimum we need to offer them? Is there a maximum price we need to offer them? If we're going to do it, let's rip right into them for it. Absolutely, you can come. It's £1,000 a go. And you're all stuck behind that big green pillar right at the end.
We've actually brought in extra pillars.
if they're going to say, if the SFA, or to be more logical about it, if the SFA say, you need to offer them tickets, and we say, well, I'm not going to do it. And the fine is, let's just do another fine, raise a fine for Palestine, or match a fine for Palestine. Let's just do that. Because it'll be worth it. Get more Celtic fans in, make a day of it, enjoy it. Let's not take any nonsense. I quite happily don't have them back at all. I know they talk about it damages the special atmosphere of the game. To be honest with you, see that first game that we went back to play them at Hampden. There was way back in the day. I was in the opinion at that point. I'd happily never play this mob ever again. And the less I have to see him, the happier I'm.
Paul, you were going to say something there?
Yeah, it was just around the pricing. I think I've asked that question before around why we can't just charge them 900 quid a ticket. And I think the answer is there is an obscure league rule that says we can't charge them any more than we charge our own fans. So if we charge them 900 quid, then the non-season ticket holders get charged 900 quid as well, unfortunately. Because I think that has been matched. When we were charging them 52 quid, the guys who don't have season tickets were paying 52 quid for tickets to Celtic Park as well, our guys. So there is a...
All right, in that case, I take it back, because I need to buy my tickets, right? Don't charge them £1,000 at all.
But surely there must be a way you could do something where, your ticket's £52, but if you agree to that, you automatically get a discounted voucher to use at any Celtic game, including the one that you're paying a £52 for a ticket for.
Charge them a security bond. £1,000 non-refundable if you don't break your seat. Or refundable if you break your seat. Sorry.
Sean, what's your thoughts on the ticket gate?
I'm going to come in with a different angle here. As somebody who, for the best part of 25 years, followed them home and away, and I mean every game, certainly in Scotland, couldn't afford to go to Europe very often, before family commitments kicked in, and now tickets are too hard to get. It really makes me sad, actually, that it's came to this, because, you know, again, it's a cliche, but it was one of the great games of world football. And sometimes St. Junior sits down and shows me a video on YouTube that he's came across, and a Celtic Rangers game. And I'll say, well, your dad was there that day. I was in that bit, I was in this bit, I was in the other bit. And you know, the noise is phenomenal from both ends. And it adds to, I know that their singing might be inappropriate in certain ways, and I'm not advocating that for a minute. But what I mean is, it was the colour from both ends. It was a noise from both ends. It was a phenomenal atmosphere. And the young guys now only getting to see that. And I find that very, very sad. And it's all because of selfish reasons. Because, as you have already indicated there, we were pumping them in their own patch. I was talking to a guy one day, and he said that he was actually being very humorous about it. He's a Rangers fan. And he said it was a 3-2 game where we had 10 men and Edward came on as a sub and scored the goal that gave us the 3-2 win. And he says that he walked down Paisley Road West after the game, and he says it was about 15, 20 minutes after the final whistle. And he got to the gusset at Paisley Road West, roughly where the old Bellahouston Hotel is, where Edmondson Drive meets Paisley Road West. And he says we could still hear the Celtic fans singing. He says that it was that loud. He says because it was just mass celebrations. It was a tremendous run. So the fact they've done me out for that reason, and now they're trying to portray us as the bad guys because we've basically called their bluff. And I quite agree with Celtic, which Celtic should have done at the very beginning, is say either he gives a full allocation of a no take nothing but due to safety concerns. And that might have launched the boil at the time. We've let it fester a wee bit, and now we're in this rough situation whereby I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen, to be honest. So I'm really disappointed for the guys in our support that like to go to every game, because I was one of the guys for years. And I'm actually disappointed for the decent Rangers fans that follow their team as well, that kind of get to see those games in the flesh. And I'm really disappointed for the young guys, because they'll never know what a good atmosphere that was. The only reason you tend to get it now is a game at Hampden, where you get a 50-50 cut. And you know, the atmosphere can be good for that point of view, because, again, it's a spectacle, it's the sight, it's the noise. And we've lost that. And you know, what was one of the big games in world football is now just, for me, it's turning into a run-of-the-mill league game.
Paul, say mentioned something there, and it's been touched on in this conversation, the challenge of getting to away games. I mean, I used to go to away games, same as Saint, working family commitments then come along, and then you decide, I want to start going back to away games again. And then the thing comes out, you know, tickets are available now for Easter Road, provided you've been to 3,352 of the last 72 away games. You can get a ticket for Easter Road, and you can never get on. Ironically, in the last 10 years, I mean, obviously, you can get to Rugby Park. You used to be able to get to Rugby Park, now that's changed, but it was Livingston, Rugby Park, and Ibrox were the only three games that I had a chance of getting tickets for because of the size of the allocation. And of course, what's happening now, what's happening to the Rangers, is being replicated across other grounds. I think Aberdeen were down. You mentioned Hearts. What's going on with a week? So it's not only does Celtic make it impossible, you know, it's pulled rules at Celtic. You know, once you're on and you got your ticket, you can't get off and nobody else can get on. In addition to that difficulty of getting a ticket for a away game, it's now actually becoming more difficult for the people who are in the pulled rules gambit thing, because clubs are cutting it. What's going on in Scottish football?
Well, it frustrates the hell out of me, because when you actually look at, you know, stadia, we go to Ross County, or we go to Kilmarnock, or we go to St Johnstone, where in the past, we certainly Kilmarnock and St Johnstone, we've been able to enjoy sizeable allocations because they couldn't sell their tickets. But their stands lying empty, their stands lying half empty. But there's two sides to that. One is, you know, from our point of view, economically, that's just nonsense. Scottish football can't afford to lock people out of games, so how do we can break through that? But, you know, I've got a lot of mates that are Hibs fans, I've got a lot of mates that are Aberdeen fans, Hearts fans. You know, staying outside Glasgow, you tend to get a more of a mix, I think. But, you know, they are quite defensive of their club's positions around this. They believe, A, if we can sell our own tickets to our own people, then we're going to do that. And B, they're not huge fans of us and Rangers travelling supports for various reasons, mainly probably the singing, to be honest. And that comes into it as well. You know, they're looking at it, and you know, I'm not trying to make the argument on their behalf, but the argument that my friends make is that why should I take my kids and listen to songs about, you know, stuff that's nothing to do with football? And I know that's always been there. I know that's you know, nothing new there, but football's trying to attract a new audience these days, and that's the argument that's getting made with these guys, is that, you know, I want to be able to take my kids to games and not have to listen to that. So I'm quite happy that Hearts or Aberdeen are locking the Celtic fans out. And, you know, I'm not sure 100% agree with it, but you've got to have a degree of sympathy with that argument.
Eddie, I mean, as Paul said, most clubs outside Glasgow see us as two cheeks of the same arse in relation to the behaviour of our away supports. And in fact, what was it, something like five, St Mirren's top five attended games last season didn't include either of Celtic or Rangers. I'm sure it was some stat like that. So what's your thoughts
on that? Those stats, though, without numbers aren't my strong point, obviously, as you know, but those stats are skewed by the fact that the games that will be the top attended ones will not be on the TV. So to put that forward, that argument that people stay away from the games when Celtic and when Rangers go, it's not taken into consideration
all the factors that create that statistic. You know, so for folk to put that forward, I'm not suggesting that you were putting that forward in any sort of serious argument there. Like, in fact, I'm not suggesting you put forward any serious arguments ever. But to put that forward as a serious argument, it's spurious because it can easily be shot down by the fact that the very fact that our games are on the telly reduces the attendance of the home support. You know, they don't. Whereas our away support will go. If you offer us 2,000 tickets, 2,000 people will turn up. You offer us 5,000 tickets, 5,000 people will turn up. If you offer us 10,000 tickets, 10,000 people will turn up. We'd all like to go to these games, but there isn't sufficient capacity in these clubs to take us. Some folks saying they don't like singing, they don't like this, they don't like that. I hear all of that. We can argue about the type of singing and what's been sung and what's not been sung all the time, but there are so many other factors in Scottish society that aren't being addressed, but all of a sudden people want to talk about the singing being the big issue. Do you know what I mean? I just feel as if I'm not saying it's hypocrisy, but it's a safe, easy argument because sometimes people just don't like big teams. People don't like Man United. People don't like Liverpool. People don't like Chelsea. People don't like Man City. They don't like them because these teams come and beat them. And for us, the singing's an easy stick to beat us with, but the reality of the situation is these other teams don't like getting beat and they want to try and do something to prevent that from happening. We don't like seeing Celtic and Rangers come to our club. You know why? Because we normally put five or six baggies. That's the real reason you don't like it. The singing's just secondary. Because we can hear tons of dodgy singing at Tynecastle when we're no there anyway. We can hear it sometimes at Kilmarnock when we're no there. We can hear all sorts of people being up to all sorts of other people's blood. Christ, even Morton and St Mirren supporters have a go at each other and the singing can be offensive if you want to be offended by it. It's a bigger argument than just they don't want us there because the singing's dodgy.
Saint, what are your thoughts on these clubs that are... I mean, the interesting thing actually is that Hearts are reducing the away ticket allocation for everybody except Hibs.
I can see why, because obviously the Hearts fans have told the club that they want to go to Easter Road and they want to enjoy the atmosphere in a derby game. And there was actually Rangers supporters, and I remember this at the time, who were writing into the papers and coming on the radio and saying, we don't agree with us cutting the Celtic allocation down because we want to get the same allocation at Celtic Park for the Glasgow derby games. Well, what I think is a bit disingenuous for the Rangers' point of view, you know, is that a lot of their fans are saying, we get put in the corner and it's a shite view. And then there's another argument which defies all logic. You have got a bigger stadium, so you should give us a bigger allocation, right? And I just I don't see that argument at all. And people have put photos on of the Rangers support at Celtic Park. Yes, they are in the corner. Some of them are in the corner. But that is, Eddie was saying there, that it goes all the way around behind the goal at the family stand. It was a huge part of the Jockstein stand that they got. It wasn't just a wee shitey bit in the corner that they were alluding to. So, again, they've been a bit disingenuous there, and they're almost just trying to come up with reasons for what they've done. But we really know what the reasons we've done is, and some of them have actually admitted it to me, we were getting pumped, but we were sick of the celebrations, and we don't want you to see you as having a party at the end of the final whistle.
That's it in a nutshell. That's what it comes down to. We were beating them, and we were beating them comfortably, and they didn't like it. And so now that they're doing that... Trumpist approach, where they tell you black is white and up is down and left, and then try and argue. And now they're trying to argue that, well, we're quite happy to have away support. You, five of you can turn up and you can go to that bit of the ground where we can throw things at you. That's a lot of nonsense. The reality of the situation was they think that by no allowing us to be in that ground, they've got a better chance of winning. Because if the fans aren't there to back the team, they think they've got a better chance of winning, and they need every single advantage they can get against us. Because we're better than them. We're a better football team and we're a better organised club than they are. And they think this will give them an advantage. There's no other arguments. Nothing else matters. Don't believe anything else you read because none of it's true. That's what it's all about. If they thought they could beat us, they'd want 20,000 of us in there to watch us get beat so that they could look at our faces. I've been to Ibrox through the 90s and I've watched individuals staring at us and reveling in the fact that we're getting a doing, and they could point out individuals of us and start pointing us and trying to give us a hard time and stuff like that. They loved us being there when they were beating us. Mm-hmm. It's all about the fact that they are no as good as us and they can't take it and they're trying to get
Let me make one wee other point about St Mirren here, because I know a couple of St Mirren fans, and You remember last season, last September, Celtic played very poorly and St Mirren deserved to win 2-0. I'm not taking it away from them. On the day, that they were the better team. And for months and months and months, he kept saying to me, that's because we only gave you one stand and our fans were in there and that inspired our players. Well, the next time we went back to St Mirren Park to play them, probably around about February time, we pumped them 5-1. And my argument to them was at that point, what happened to your fans at the weekend then? Where's the big difference? Because whether you've got the ground full of St Mirren fans or whether Celtic fans get two ends or whatever it is, as we were saying there, Celtic have got better players and you know, nine times out of ten, Celtic are going to win, they're going to win well. So this sort of myth had grown up over a few months there that, you know, if we lock them out, we've got a better chance of beating them. That's not the case. It's just small-mindedness.
So, there we are with fans. I'm about to get onto the game on Sunday. Just finally, for those listening, you already know this. For us on the podcast, Hibs are going through. They are 2-2 in Switzerland, and it's in the 95th minute. From Hearts are currently 3-1 up against Rosenborg, and it's 90+7 of my live score. Anything of interest that you noticed out of that, Eddie, in the Rosenborg game?
Well, I'm just amazed that Hearts, being the shambles that they are behind the scenes, look as if they're going to go through. But I hope everybody's keeping a wee eye on the Rosenborg number 41.
Is that the
16-year-old
boy?
That's all I'll say for now. If Rosenborg go out, I hope everybody's keeping a wee eye on that number 41, because I think we've got a very good relationship with his agent.
Well, what position does he play?
He plays left. I think he plays left mid, centre mid, left mid.
Right.
He plays the number 41 position, apparently.
I don't think he's the showbiz signing that you're looking for. And definitely, I would need to accept that if we do sign him as a 16-year-old, then he would qualify as a project.
Project, yeah.
But he's playing European football tonight. He's got to have something. But yes, there's apparently we're looking at him quite closely tonight, and we've looked at him quite closely in previous games as well.
All right, so final thing. So before we wrap up, we have a game on Sunday. We are on a plastic pitch away in the League Cup, and obviously it's the fourth most important trophy that we'll be playing in, but I always find for a new manager it's the most important trophy, because you can get a trophy in the bag to keep everybody happy by you move on. So, Paul, what's your expectations on Sunday? Full team, winning game, what's your expectations?
I think it's still early enough in the season. We're not playing twice a week, so I think it'll be full team. Obviously, minus the injuries from Sunday, so probably without Carter Vickers, probably without Hatate. Whether we take a risk with Carter Vickers on that pitch anyway, just coming back, I don't know. So I think there'll be some tweaks from Sunday gone there, but it'll pretty much be a strong team, and I think we'll win quite comfortably.
All right, Eddie, your thoughts?
I think it'll be relatively comfortable. I wonder if we will play the two new centre-halves together rather than risk Carter Vickers on that pitch. I see the manager just talking about how he wasn't happy about decisions that were given in the League Cup semi-final. I couldn't remember that we played them in the League Cup semi-final, to be honest with you. That's how relevant they are to us. They did well in the first game of the season, but they were stuffy. And I think we will be better than them. And if he tries to play that man-marking thing that he used to do against Brendan Rodgers' teams when he was at Aberdeen, he'll get a doing. I like their centre-halves. I think they're quite well organised. I've always liked Stuart Finlay, even when he was back at Celtic way back in the day. I think he's a decent big Scottish centre-half. And I don't mean that in a disparaging terms. I just mean he's got good qualities. A bit like the way I was talking about Stephen Welsh last week. But I think if we play our first choice centre forward, if we give Yang a run out and we play a strong midfield, which we're more than capable of doing, I'd maybe give Holm a wee run out. We could probably get away with playing those two centre halves together. Wee bit wary about that. Maybe Welsh will take the place of one of them, because maybe it's a bit too much to bring the Swedish guy straight into the team. But I think we'll be relatively comfortable. We'll be in the next round.
I wondered actually if Brendan was very complimentary of Stephen Welsh after the game against Aberdeen after he came on. I wondered if that was an element of whether Carter Vickers recovers or not, he's not going to be playing the plastic pitch. So Stephen Welsh says, so I'm going to have to make sure he's full of confidence because he's playing next week. I wondered if there was an element of that in Brendan Rodgers. What's your thoughts, Sean?
Yeah, obviously he's trying to talk the boy up, which is, I think, fair enough because he's going to try and do that with some of the fringe players that he might need to bring in from time to time. And he may also have known that Carter Vickers has got a wee bit of an angle that, and he would need to rely on him. In terms of the Kilmarnock game, I think what's helpful for us is that they did beat Rangers because when we drew Kilmarnock, everybody was in the opinion, oh, we'll pump Kilmarnock, that'll be no bother. So I'm not saying that it's going to be overly difficult, but it has given us a wee bit of a, well, you know, hold on a minute here. They did beat Rangers, so maybe we'll not take this as easy as what we might have done otherwise. So it's maybe opened my eyes up a wee bit, but this isn't a bad thing, to be honest, because sometimes you get into you can go into these games and overconfidence can come back and bite you. So them having beaten Rangers, I think, is a good thing because there's less chance of that happening.
So what do you think is the score going to be for Sunday?
You know me, I'm always a great believer in one more than them will do me, but we've scored four against Ross County, we've scored three against Aberdeen. The hope is that we're going to get another three or four, but again, I don't want that to sound too cocky. That it could be a, you know, these games are as hard as you make them, and that's always my attitude. If we turn up and we play well, we win.
All right, okay, so that's three people on here, all going for a Celtic win on Sunday. Actually, no debate, no doubt, all pretty confident about a Celtic win, so that's all good.
Who, isn't he? There's four people on this podcast.
I've just not said what I'm going to do.
You're sitting on the fence. You're scared to nail your colours to the mast, Harry. Is that what it is?
No.
You're hedging your bets here because of the big game. You're worried it could go either way and you don't want to look stupid by banking Celtic. Or really think Kamara are going to win and you just aren't brave enough to say it out loud?
I think it'll be 4-1 Celtic.
Oh, there he is. Yeah, I knew I could goad you into it.
as Saint said, we're scoring the goals this season, so yeah, I'm going 4-1 Celtic. And with that, because I know that one of us needs to get off and do something more important than being a Celtic podcast, with that I will say thanks everybody very much.
Surely all of us have got something better to be doing than this, but thank you very much. Good night.
Cheers.
Hey guys.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Hello to all the new listeners who have joined us over the last wee while, who maybe, you know, had a family growing up since the last podcast before the last week. I hope you are enjoying the constant output from CelticUnderground.net. Those of you who have listened to this one for free have no doubt used your unique user code, your hashtag Unionist Lick Spittle, on your Patreon feed to be able to get this advert free and subscription free. Anyway, that was Paul Thompson, St Anthony and Eddie Pearson and myself. We will have more along soon. He's crying in his beard just now, but Lawrence will be back again, possibly Remy, special guest lined up hopefully next week to talk about something quite different. Anyway, enough of me, special guests and all that stuff. More rumours coming, more transfer stuff. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
A new bright tomorrow, make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.